The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Merry meets and merry parts, bright the cheeks and warm the heart. For tread the circle thrice about to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the ParaX Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, merry meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Tonight, my guest is Bill Randall, and he's here to talk about a haunted ship where the spirits are still very much alive. Bill has lived in Bay City, Michigan his entire life, and as soon as he graduated from high school, he enlisted in the Navy. He was a machinist repairing all kinds of mechanical issues when things went wrong aboard ship, and he started to volunteer aboard the USS Edson the day he arrived in Bay City, and has done thousands of tours under his belt and lots of shipboard maintenance as well. He got more and more involved with the paranormal aspect of the ship, and one thing led to another, and he started to host investigations on board. Now, if you're in the ParaX chat room listening live and have any questions or comments for Bill, fire away. And if you're not and you want to be here, it's ParaXRadioNetwork.com. All right, Bill, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, Marla? It's very, very good to be here.
Yeah, well, you have a good reason to be here. you've got some good tales to tell about the ship.
I do.
And I dug around a little bit and read that it was named after a Major General Merritt Austin Edson.
Yes.
He was a Marine, and this is one of the few destroyers named after a Marine veteran.
That is correct. Yeah, he was a Major General in the U.S. Marines.
And did he do something extravagantly great? Or
yes. What it was, Marl, is that Merritt Austin Edson, a Major General, he was in command of what they called the 1st Marine Raider Division. And his call to fame was in World War II in the Pacific, in Guadalcanal. There was himself and about 800 other Marines that had to hold a hill there. It's called called Edson's Ridge now, to hold it to keep the Japanese at bay from taking over Henderson Field, which was an airstrip that was there, vital to running bombing missions into Tokyo. So he was able to fight off almost 3,000 Japanese troops to hold that island, and he ended up with a Medal of Honor out of that battle and his name on the ship.
Oh, that's very cool. So when, a little backstory about the ship. When was it made, built, and stuff like that?
Sure. Well, the ship was actually commissioned. It was commissioned in 1958. They laid the keel to start building her in 1956. So she was commissioned for active duty in 58 and then decommissioned in 1988. So it had a 30-year career.
Mm. You know, I was reading some stuff. Like I said, I did my homework a little bit. And I read that the ship departed on November 25th, 1965, along with the USS Kitty Hawk. For naval gunfire operations on the South Vietnamese coast.
Yes.
And what makes that interesting is I was on the Kitty Hawk in 1965. They had an open house or something. My friend's two brothers were stationed on the ship, and it was in San Diego.
Right.
And so we got to go and get on the ship and look around. Oh, my God, it was terribly big.
It's huge. Yeah.
And so, you know, and I guess it was kind of an open house for people who, you know, family and friends,
right,
kind
right.
of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if the Edson was hanging out in
originally, I think the Edson, she was homeported in Long Beach. And when she left to go to Vietnam, she left out of Long Beach.
Awesome.
the Kitty Hawk was probably part of that task group. And Matter of fact, I was stationed in San Diego, the Kitty Hawk was there. And now that has long since been decommissioned too, and I think they scrapped it out.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing. But it was just, you know, I'm reading this coincidental and I see Kitty Hawk and I see 65 and I'm going, whoa. This is a very small world.
Right. Well, now you know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I sure am.
Yeah. Well, I spent 6 years on these ships at sea and, like I say, repairing other ships. So I take people through the ship on tours because basically I know what I'm looking at. And if I don't, I kind of gauge the, you know, the people that I'm with. And if I don't know, I just make stuff up. So, you know.
There you go. So what compelled you to volunteer on the ship in the first place?
Well, it's kind of funny because I still have to this very day a fascination for ships on the water. Mm-hmm. And when I found out that they were going to get the ship coming into Bay City, Michigan, which was in 2012, the person who headed this project up, I had met him in the Bay City Mall. And I told him at the time, he was a retired Navy chief petty officer. But I had told him that if you get the ship in here, that I would be glad to volunteer on it. And when it came in 2012, I had asked him, I said, what do you need? And he said, well, I need tour guides. I said, okay, I'm a tour guide. And I've been that ever since.
And you're also kind of fixing little tweaks and stuff that go wrong, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. It's a never ending thing, as you can imagine, Marla. Taking care of the ship is an undaunting task.
Mm-hmm. But a great one.
Yes.
Yep. So before you got involved with the paranormal stuff on the ship, did you believe in ghosts and things that went bump in the night? Or
I would have to say no. I was a skeptic naturally. Mm-hmm. But as time went by, there was a spongy real quick here. There was a group of paranormal investigators that had come to the ship one day. And I thought, well, this is kind of hokey. But what they did is they had invited some of the public to come and stay with them. And I was there, I want to say about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night to make sure no one has fallen down a hole or a ladder because the inside of the ship is dark, naturally, and the mm-hmm. whole ship is open to them. So I checked in. And from that point on, seeing that some of the things that went on, I was hooked.
Did you go in kicking or screaming or just shaking your head and saying, oh my gosh?
No, I went in, as a matter of fact, because I had attended a couple more of these investigations that these people had put on. It was mm-hmm. at the time was MPI Investigations Paranormal. Mm-hmm. And it got to be where, like I say, things happened that I couldn't explain. Now, I don't know about other people, because they say things, I can only tell you what has happened to me personally. Mm-hmm. But in the time that I've been there doing investigations, very, very unusual, strange things happen that I cannot explain. And naturally, you try to debunk everything, but some of these things I can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's the thing. If you can't debunk it, it's probably happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not your imagination.
Sure.
They got a nickname, speaking of ghosts, yes. The boat is called the Gray Ghost of the Vietnam Coast.
That's
Why
correct.
Was that? What happened?
Yep. Yes. And the way that got that, it was actually, while she was doing, running what they call the gun line in Vietnam up the coast and supplying ground support for the troops inland, she actually took fire and did take a hit. And she was able to actually escape this battle in a smoke screen and was put out to the South China Sea and went over to Subic Bay in the Philippines, was put into dry dock. There's about 10 people that were wounded with shrapnel wounds when the ship took a hit. Luckily, nobody was killed, but they put her in dry dock and had to repair the battle damage that happened to the ship. And it was about 4 months later, she's back off the coast of Vietnam. And what had happened is when she took a hit, North Vietnam, Radio Hanoi, reports to all the enemy troops that the Edson was hit and sunk with no survivors. It's propaganda, like in World War II was Tokyo Rose.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they take the ship back, and it's back off the coast, and the enemy is very, very surprised to see it. And it was the enemy that named her the Gray Ghost of the Vietnamese Coast because they're a very superstitious culture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the enemy that named her.
That's interesting, you know, because I can see it, you know, they're all this smoke around and they're sitting there clapping right. their hands. We got them. We got them.
Yeah, exactly. And they just disappeared.
That's funny. I like that. how did the ship end up in Bay City?
Well, there used to be actually in Bay City, there was a shipbuilding company that was here. It was called Defoe Shipbuilding, and they built ships just like the Edson. They have long since gone out of business years and years ago, but they had built ships that were just like the Edson, almost the same class. It was an Adams class, which is very similar to what we have here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's my phone going, woo, I have very interesting sound there. There's a connection between the ship and 9/11. What is that?
Yes. Now, when the ship was decommissioned in 1988, it was taken out of service, and it was actually a museum in New York City for 13 years. Mm. And it was alongside the pier, alongside the USS Intrepid, which is another aircraft carrier. So these two ships made up the Air and Space Museum in New York City. Well, she was there after 13 years. They let it go, and they returned it back to what's called a mothball fleet in Philadelphia. And it was scheduled to be scrapped out, and that's where we got a hold of it. We found out we had to make applications to the Navy. And the paperwork, Marla, that we had to do made a book 7 inches thick. You talk about red tape. Well, what we did is we towed it up the St. Lawrence Seaway out of Philadelphia to Bay City, and that's how we got the ship there.
Mm. And now she's a National Historical Landmark, right?
That it is, yes. Yep.
Wow, yeah. That's kind of neat. And there's only like two of the Forrest class destroyers left?
Yep. It's a Forrest Sherman class, and originally there were 18, and now there's only two left in the world. There's this one, and there's one out in Bremerton, Washington, which is also a museum ship.
Oh, okay. So I don't know if you know this, but who the hell was Forrest Sherman?
I don't really tell you the truth. He had to be some kind of, I think it's an admiral that used to be back in the old sailing days. You know, it's like, don't give up the ship. You know, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. John Paul Jones, he had a saber or a sword or something. But the stories are all named under different classes, and that means they carry different things.
Oh, okay. Now, Tim Shaw told me a bit about his experience when he was there on board. Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, it had something to do with him chasing down a shadow person.
Yeah.
And tell us about that. Okay. He dangled the carrot is all.
Oh, I know. I can't wait to tell you. Now, Tim is, when he comes over the ship, Marlon, Tim has got so much energy. It is unbelievable. And you talk about fun. Well, you know, he's your big brother. So,
Yep.
But talk about fun. He was there one night, and there was a group of us, and I'm going to say there was probably 15 of us in an investigative group, and we all kind of conjured into a place called the 9/11 room. And it's a room that's used as a classroom now, so we're all sitting in there, and the lights were off. All we had was on a couple of red deck lights, so you could see to walk around. And I'm facing Tim. And Tim's looking at a doorway that goes through a bulkhead into another room. And all of a sudden, Tim jumps up and he starts running. And he ran right over top of me, almost knocked me out of my chair. And I thought, he said he saw a full body apparition standing in the passageway door leading into another room. So he figured he's going to get up and chase it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what are you, crazy?
Well, you should have known that already.
Yeah, I know I did. I figured that out for myself. But yes, he did. He saw, and it's only one of the very, very rare times is what he told me that he had seen an apparition. Now, right after that, Tim didn't know about our resident ghost. Okay. And what we have there is when the ship was in a museum ship in New York City, there was a man that took care of the ship as the curator. He was basically my counterpart. He did tours and maintenance on the ship. And what we had found out was that this man, his name is Paul, that he actually lived aboard the ship when it was a museum ship in New York City taking care of this thing. And Paul actually passed away on the ship. And supposedly that's who we keep bumping into. And after Tim had his experience, I showed him a picture of Paul, And he said, that is the man I saw standing in the doorway. So we bump into Paul a lot. I mean, just even everyday tourists, guests, they have had experiences with this guy. He tends to be a real prankster. He likes to move things around a lot.
Well, sailors are, aren't they?
I can't vouch for everybody else, but I am, absolutely.
There you go.
he's been there because he lived on the ship for 13 years, and he died of a heart attack on the ship.
Mm.
So he's still roaming the place.
So give us a couple of examples of what you've been seeing.
Okay. The first thing that ever happened to me, now, I'd been working on the ship for a couple of years, and in one day, it was in the summertime, I'm closing up the ship at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So I'm the only one on board, and I had taken a couple of ex-sailors down into some places where it's not open to the public, which we do on occasion. So as I'm closing up ship, I have to go back down in that area to turn the lights off before I leave. And the room that I'm standing in, Marla, has two doors. There's one on the left side of the room and one on the right side of the room, and they both go through the same wall. Well, these doors are steel, watertight doors, meaning when they close, they have a big lever that comes down and presses them up against a flange with rubber, so they seal against water. And they're very heavy. So the one on the left was there's a hook on the bottom that holds these doors open. Otherwise, gravity would just cause them to close by themselves. So I go in the left door, and I'm into a forward berthing area where some of the crew used to live, and it's going up towards the bow, up towards the pointy end of the ship. So as I'm walking through there, I'm turning the lights off behind me. And what I did is I cross across the room to come out the door on the right side as I'm turning off lights in the same room. And when I come out that door, now the door on the left side is closed and it's sealed. And I never close it and I never seal it. And being it's a steel door, when it closes, it makes a lot of noise. And I'm no more than 20, 22 feet from this door and I never heard a sound. So I stood there scratching my head. And I thought, there's no way I close this door. So I called down to the office, and it so happened my wife was down there. And I said, who else is on the ship? And she says, nobody, it's just you. I said, just me. So I'm walking through there going, please don't kill me. But that was my first experience. And I thought that was really, really strange. And at that time, like I say, it really piqued my curiosity. And to this very day, it's kind of funny because I still wonder, I know I didn't close that door. I didn't do it. Okay. And when we met Paul, okay, the day that we actually met him, we didn't know anything about him. And Metro Paranormal had an investigation going on. Like I say, I went back later on at night. And some of the people they invited to stay with them asked me, because I knew the ship, how far below decks and how far forward can you get in the ship? Because they didn't know the layout. Mm-hmm. I said, well, I'll take you down there. So we went down to a room, and it's called the Bosun's Locker. And it's below decks, and it's all the way to the front of the ship. And what the room used to be used for was they stored paint and things like that in there. So there was seven of us in there that night, and it was in August. And it's very, very hot. And at the time, there was no electric power up in that section of the ship. So there's no air moving. It's very stagnant. So we're standing. There's seven of us standing in this room, and all we had was the flashlights on our telephones. And there was myself and my wife, another man and his wife, a woman from England. Her name was Andrea, and a teenage kid and his girlfriend. So we're in this room, and all of a sudden, this woman, this guy's wife, says, do you mind if I turn this on? And I asked her, well, what is it? She said, well, it's a spirit box. And I said, well, I don't care. I never heard of it. I didn't even know what it was. So she turns it on, and she sets it down on a shelf. And naturally, you hear this box going off. And we're standing there, and I happen to shine my light on this Andrea from England, and she has goosebumps all of her arms, and her hair is standing up, and all of a sudden you can feel the temperature just start to fall. And I said, Andrea, she says, what's going on? And she didn't say anything. All she said was, is there someone here with us tonight? And through this spirit box, through the static, all seven of us hear yes. We kind of looked like, did you actually hear that? It was rather garbled, but we did hear it. And Andrea says, can you tell us what your name is? Now, this is all new stuff to me. Mm-hmm. And through this box, we hear the name Paul. And it was very clear and very distinct. And then she says, Paul. Can you tell us when you passed away? And all we hear is the number 2. And that's all we know. There's other things that were on it, but they were rather too garbled to make out. Mm-hmm. And we made note of it, and we told MPI what we had experienced, and they made note of that. And it was the very next day. This happened to be on a Saturday night when this happened. And it was the next day that my wife and I were in the office, and we're telling some of our volunteers, you know, what we had experienced. And it's kind of funny because, you know, naturally they didn't believe. But what we did is one of the other volunteers got on her phone on Google, and all she had to do is type in Google search, Paul USS Edson. And up come this huge article about a man named Paul Spampinato, who was the caretaker who died aboard the ship in 1992. So it all came together within a weekend. So that's when we met Paul.
And he's still around, huh?
We still bump into him. Yeah, you'll see him out of the corner of your eye, but he's a, like I say, he's a prankster. He likes to pull hair, and he likes to tap people on the shoulder, move things around. Yep, but we figure he's still there.
Are there other spirits that hang out?
There has been, and in one of the investigations, there was some ladies that come up out of Ohio, and they were there, and once again, in this bosun's locker. Now, it's about as big as maybe a couple of bathrooms. It's not a real big room. But they had, they said, as many as 7 entities that they were referencing to. And I was in there, and I was standing against a wall talking to somebody, and I felt as if I turned to my left, I'm going to be staring somebody right in the face. And once again, like I say, it was dark up there. But, yeah, they've had people, and I've asked Tim about this, passing through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the ship was actually in New York City on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did is the Navy and the FBI and the city of New York made a command center on board a retired destroyer because they used the radio system to dole out instructions to Homeland Security for 3 weeks from that ship.
Mm.
So there is dust on the ship from the World Trade Centers.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think, you know, ghosts, if they go and know that people are looking for them, you know, if they're just going by, you know, they'll pop in and say hello.
Yeah.
Or worse.
I think that's kind of what happened because there was a lady there one night. She had some dowsing rods and she said that there was people kind of waiting in line to speak. And that's kind of how it felt. But, you know, like I say, some people come over there, Marla, they have so much equipment with them. That, and I said, we're setting up some equipment. Two ladies for local, and they was over there, and they were setting up the computers and infrared this and, you know, EVTs this and all kinds of stuff. And while they're there doing that, I said, all you have to do is stand here and listen. Because at the time they're doing that, I hear walking on the main deck. Now, it's a steel deck. And it's not walking, it's pacing. And we're the only 3 people there. And I said, well, let me go check it out. And I went up on the main deck from where we were. And our car is the only car in the parking lot. The gate is still locked, and we're the only ones on the ship. And it was pacing like someone is saying, hurry up and get out of my room. I said, but all this other stuff you got, all these instruments and things like that, I said, you just need your ears and your eyes, basically. Mm-hmm. So that did actually happen to me. That's one of the things I can't explain because I thought, well, something's moving somewhere, but I couldn't find anything.
Yeah, well, when you can't explain it, like I said, it probably happened, and you know you're never going to know for sure. So
exactly,
you know, we kind of move on. And how did that happen? Oh, never mind, it happened.
Exactly.
You know, it's one of those things. Have you spent the night by yourself?
I have been on the ship overnight. As a matter of fact, last time Tim was here, we did spend the entire night on the ship. We didn't get any sleep naturally. But Tim was set to leave the next day at 10 o'clock in the morning, and we walked off that ship at 7 o'clock in the morning. So he got a couple hours sleep before he went home. But, yeah, I've been out overnight. And people that do spend the night, they do sleep on the ship because we do have overnights there.
Oh.
A lot of them, what they'll do is they swear they hear somebody walking by jingling keys, like on a key ring. Mm-hmm. And I've had a lot of people tell me that. But, you know, I'm thinking, well, the guy was a caretaker. He probably had a lot of keys.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And probably, too, all the people, some of the sailors, are attached to it, maybe,
right.
You know.
Yes.
So when they were in Vietnam, there weren't any casualties at all, ever, right?
No. Well, there were wounded, but there were nobody was, thankfully, nobody was killed.
Okay. So it can't be them. But, yeah, but, I mean, sometimes people get the thing that, oh, my God, this is a really happy place, even though it was like war. It was my happy place, or this was the best time of my life, or whatever.
It's your home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there they come back, and maybe some stay. I mean, they can come back and go and whatever. They probably can have a reunion on their own that you guys don't know about.
I wouldn't doubt it in the least, to tell you the truth. Yeah, but we did have – there was one casualty on board, and what it was a suicide. And they had – there was a young sailor that had – he had received a Dear John letter from his – I don't know if it was his fiancé or his girlfriend. There's many, many versions of the story that I've heard. But he became so despondent and so depressed that he actually committed suicide on board the ship.
Oh.
And what he did is he went into an area. It was below a small round hatch, and it was like a storeroom. Mm-hmm. And he went in there, closed the hatch behind him, and it's a watertight hatch and only has a wheel on the inside of it. So he went in there and closed up that hatch, and he suffocated. He was, I was told, he was a 19-year-old kid. And now we've done some experiments in that room.
Uh-huh.
And strange enough, what we did one night, we had some people on board. We had taken two cell phones. We put one cell phone down in what's called the HT shop. They're hull technicians. That's where this guy was. They're welders.
Mm-hmm.
And we put a phone down there, and we had a phone up on the mess decks. And we opened that line up, had somebody answer the phone down below. And in that room, we had a music box. It was really, really strange. So we had an open line, and we're sitting on the mess decks listening for this room. And this music box starts going off. Now, it's on a proximity switch where you just got to get close to it. And it just keeps going off, on and off, and on and off. And there is nobody down there. So people have told me that they may think that they might have spotted him. All I know is his last name was Pline, P-L-I-N-E. Mm. But, and that's, you know, like I said, there's different versions of that story. But, so to speak, that they said that did happen.
Well, that could be, you know, a reason that he's there. And I heard one Kitty Hawk story that there, I guess when you go out to the flight deck, there's this humongous door, you know, that weighs about 5 tons or something.
Right. Yeah.
And for some reason, they were all called out to the deck, and this guy kind of missed the call, and he ran through it, and he got squashed.
Oh.
Yeah. So I know that was.
Well, it does happen. As you can imagine, Marla, it's an inherently very dangerous place to be. A lot of things can go wrong very, very fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, well, especially with a carrier like that, you know.
Yes, right.
Planes are taking off and things are going on all the time.
There is. It's a lot of, you have hours and hours of boredom with minutes of sheer terror is what it is.
Yeah. That's about right. And so there's a pretty good reason for a lot of reasons that some of the spirits are there. Do you talk? I mean, if you're down there and you know you're by yourself, do you talk to Paul at all?
I have tried a few times. Not usually am I there by myself, but it's kind of strange because some of our other volunteers, one guy's an electrician and he can go down there and he's working on say a fuse box or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he turned to walk away, and all of a sudden he got hit in the back with a fuse from the fuse box.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's happened. I've been down there by myself, but you sense, you know, like, and it's probably happened to you, you sense there's something there. There's something, you know, that you can't see, but it's there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, you can feel it.
Right. Yep.
This house is kind of haunted, and if I go into the garage, which is actually my friend's workshop,
right?
And the laundry's in there. Every time I go in there at night, and I'm in there, all these noises start, and I keep looking over my shoulder, you know,
because
you feel something is there.
Yes,
and it's like, okay, I'm gonna come back in the daytime. No,
all right. Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny because there's places on that ship that my wife will not go by herself. You know, because she's just too afraid to. But I got to tell you a story that the last time that Tim Shaw was there. Now, we're in this, what they call the 9/11 room. That's where they set up that command cell. And it's a pretty good sized room. And there's Tim and quite a few other people that were there that night. And we had we had instrumentation set up all around the room, all around the perimeter of the room. And at one time, they all went off at the same time. And it was almost deafening with the beeps and the whistles and the buzzers and this. And it was really, really strange. But for some reason, like I say, Tim brings a lot of energy with him. He's just, you know, there's things that follow him around that I don't know where they come from.
Yeah, well, he's like a magnet.
Oh, he is. Yeah, he is.
Yeah, but and it's funny because I can just see all the spirits on the boat, each with the thing that's going to go off. And they're going, okay, now let's count to 10. And, you know, and scare the Jesus out of them.
Yeah. We had the first time that Tim was there, we had a Ouija board. Mm-hmm. And it was brought, I've never seen one actually work. You know, I always thought it was, well, back then that was kind of a kid's game.
Sure.
But he knows more about Ouija boards than I know about anything, it seems like. But, yeah, and he opened one up and he was using it, him and another guy, and it was pretty fascinating to watch. Mm-hmm. And he actually did one night, he did table tipping in there.
Yeah.
That was really strange too. But it was pretty fascinating to watch this stuff happen.
Yeah, you're getting a great education.
Oh, I know. I love Tim. He's a great guy. He's a lot of fun.
And you're learning a whole lot. And so maybe are you comfortable there all the time, or do you have a little creepy place that you won't go into?
There is, well, like I say, in the bosun's locker, it's down in the bowels of the ship. I do get creeped out going in there, and I can feel it. You know, I get chills right now just thinking about it. I have been in there, but I'm hesitant to do it because, mm-hmm. like I say, it's in an area where the public doesn't go, where it's quiet and it's dark. Mm-hmm. And it's a little creepy for me even to this very day. When I crawl up, I'll say out of a hatch, coming up out of a compartment up through a hatch, I wonder what's coming up behind me.
So, mm-hmm.
Because that's what it feels like.
Well, at least they don't kick you on the way up.
I know. Oh, yeah, thankfully they don't.
I'm sure a lot of people have been touched and whatever.
Yes.
Now,
on a tour, there's been many, many, many times on a tour, I'll have, you know, four or five people with me. And as I'm walking around the ship explaining certain things in certain rooms, what they did in there and, you know, what it was for, there have been people right out of the clear blue sky ask me, is this place haunted? And I said, why do you ask that? And he said, because I just feel really weird. And it's sometimes if you walk into a room and there's no air to breathe, it's just a sensation that you get.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had many, many people. There's a book that we sell in our gift shop that was written by another lady that is, as a matter of fact, we're the first chapter in the book about it. And it's called The Gray Ghost. And it's about some of the public that have been in there that have had some strange experiences. And actually, they always tell me, and they always ask me, hey, is this place haunted? And I say, I mean, officially or unofficially? But it does happen. People get touched. People got pushed. People get – one woman got – she got patted on the butt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the Navy for you, so, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. Been there, done that, but it was in a fire station, and firemen are the same way.
Yeah, exactly.
you know, maybe you should get a book out there and have people scribble down their experiences.
No, that's a good – I never thought of that. That's a very good idea. Yeah.
You know, it's like when you go to a hotel or something and they have this book, how did you like your stay or, you know,
right.
whatever.
Yep.
So
yep.
maybe, you know, if you do that, you might get some really good stories because, you know, you leave it open and tell
sure.
everybody just, you know, if you feel anything or heard anything or whatever, let us know because that might be a good book.
Oh, that's great. A great source. Absolutely.
Yeah.
We had one instance that there is a up in the ship's radio room. There's a room that's off the radio room. Actually, it was a very highly secure area when the ship was alive. And inside this radio room, there's a little room called the encryption room where all the codes, radio codes, were stored. So there's a shelf in there, and it's all enclosed in plexiglass. And among some books on this shelf is a 35-millimeter film camera. Mm. And they used to take pictures of Soviet submarines with this camera. Now, the volunteers here, we're all volunteers. Nobody gets paid. But we're there all year long, even though we're closed, so we're still there in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then we'll go up on the ship and make the rounds to make sure everything is okay. And one day, one of our volunteers, he was up there, and he was going up one of the ladders to go up a deck, and that camera found its way out of that plexiglass box and was sitting two decks lower on one of the ladder steps. And to get it in and out of there, you'd have to be a contortionist to do that. Mm-hmm. But it's just, you know, things like that just, you know, just go bump in the night.
Yeah. So do you, I know the boat, I mean, you guys welcome paranormal investigations on board.
Yes.
But do you do them like for groups, or do you do it like once a week or something like that?
Well,
how does that work?
Now what we're doing is if we can get a group together, because we can't, you know, one or two or three or four people doesn't quite pan out as far as, you know, what it costs just to keep the lights on at, you know, at night. But if we get a group of 10 or more, and they make an appointment and sign up for when they want to come over. And like I said, it's usually typically on a weekend. And right now we've already got people signed up starting for when we open in March 1st. Weather permitting. So, yeah, that's what we do. You get a hold of our event coordinator, and we have a Facebook page, and it's Saginaw Valley Naval Ship Museum. And we also have a website, and it's not a website, but I say our email address is info@ussedson.org. So they can get a hold of us that way. But to schedule a group of people anytime. And sometimes if it's not a weekend, I'm there all the time. Sometimes I'll do it during a weeknight if they want to do that too. So,
Are people more apt to do it at night than in the daytime?
Yeah, I would say 99% of the people have done it. I have given a, I guess you would call it a haunted tour. And it was a tour of people that just wanted to see where some of these things happened. I've done that during the day. But typically, it's usually an investigation will go to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, people think that the boogeyman comes out after dark, but the boogeyman is there all the time.
It's there all the time, exactly.
I got a comment from the chat room. She said that ships in still in salt water is a great energy conduit.
It is, but we are actually sitting in fresh water. But it is, and to add to that comment, during a thunderstorm, really, really cool things happen because the place is electrically charged. And another thing that I found out is, now I've done quite a few of these things, the energy of the people that are there, they kind of feed on the energy of that group, you know, because sometimes you can sit there and, you know, you fall asleep. And other things are just happening and popping like you wouldn't believe. And I think it has a lot to do with the energy of the people that are there.
Yeah, it probably does. I mean, it would do. She also said she thought the Edson is in a sea lake.
Well, it's actually sitting right now. It's in the Saginaw River, which runs off of Lake Huron, which is one of the Great Lakes, and all the Great Lakes are fresh water.
Yeah. And she said freshwater conduits, you know, it's the same thing. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I was just going to see something and I just lost it. So we'll keep talking.
I don't know if you knew this, but they had a TV show there about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Yep. And it was the Tennessee Wraith Chasers, and it was called Ghost Asylum. And they took the ship under contract for a week, and even I could not go on board. And they had, it was a huge production, and they had, I think, don't quote me, but I think it's still on YouTube. You could do a search for that.
Mm-hmm.
But they interviewed me for some of the things that had happened to me, and it's my 15 minutes of fame. So, but they had come across a lot of different things, and I'm sure they probably took certain liberties, being as a TV show. But like I say, I don't know, you know. And I've seen the video, the documentary that they've made, and some of the things they've seen or done or heard, I have seen and done and heard.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. But that was kind of also in 1963, when the ship was just off the coast of Long Beach, they filmed an episode of The Twilight Zone on board the Edson.
Huh.
Yeah. And it's we play it on board for the people that want to see it. It's called The 30 Fathom Grave. And it was an hour long show. They filmed it on the Edson.
I bet people can find that on YouTube also.
I believe that's also on YouTube. You do a search for Edson and Twilight Zone, you would just very well might come across it.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. So have you ever been really, really scared of something that you've seen there or felt?
Yes. Now, this is how it went. There was a lady that works, does our events coordinator. She had wanted to stay on the ship overnight with her son, and he was, I believe, 15 years old. And mm-hmm. she bought him an overnight stay on the ship for his birthday. So they came over, and there was several of her son's friends that were there. So there was probably, I'm going to say, maybe 6-7 people besides myself and another person. And myself and this other person, we were going to do our own investigation, being that we had to be at the ship anyway. So they brought all their gear, and they started in one of the berthing areas. We're going to spend the night. And they asked us, hey, do you mind if, you know, can we join you? Can we see what's going on? And I said, yeah, I have no problem with that. So mm-hmm. we're down once again in the 9/11 room, and something that was there, Marla, did not want us there. Mm-hmm. And it made that known. And it was, I had never, ever felt threatened, mm-hmm. but that night I did. And one by one, that family started to disappear, because they were just too scared. And the one young boy whose birthday it was actually got pushed in the back. Mm-hmm. And that was it. That was it for him. And him and his mother's gone. Next thing you know, there's two more people gone. And then it's just myself and one other investigator. And it just felt really, really bad. And mm-hmm. through some of these EVPs, we're getting get out now. And since then, I mean, it's never happened again. And I equate that to something that was just passing through. I don't know. Because typically, I have never felt threatened until mm-hmm. that night. And that did scare the hell out of me.
Yeah. And it's like a flea thing. You just, you know, first you're moving really right. slow, and then all of a sudden you're moving really, really quick yes. to get out of there.
Yeah.
And probably nothing is going to happen, but we all have that fight or flee thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Fight or flight. That's what that
or
is.
Flight. Yeah.
Yeah. Flees. Well, needless to say, that family did not spend the night on the ship. They went home.
Yeah. I guess maybe sometimes the ghosts just want to be alone and,
there was something that happened. Like I said, this young man, he's 15 years old. Now, I don't know if this actually did, but it was my guess. Now, they were there early. I'm going to say 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So him and his buddy were down in that area screwing around doing something or other. They were being kids, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think they really pissed something off because they paid for it afterwards. And I don't know the story, but I think that's what happened. They were very disrespectful. That did happen. I was sitting down here. And that time, like I say, I did feel threatened. So we did get up and I told him, I said, nobody goes down there. Nobody goes down there unless, you know, I'm down there with you. So, yeah, that did actually happen.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to have a bunch more adventures, I'm sure, as time goes by. And maybe you'd like to come back and let us know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, do the book, you know.
Yeah, that's a good idea. As a matter of fact, you mentioned that. Now, have you ever been down to the Queen Mary?
Yes.
Okay. Now, they have a book like that down there also. Because have a lot of ghost and dinners is what they put on.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now, I get a lot of – I was on board that thing too, and I got a lot of strange sensations on that. And they'll have a sign on the wall that says, well, so-and-so was seen here back in whenever.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like that.
Hmm. Well, it will be really interesting. And as time goes by, we have to get out of here okay. in a minute. So give out the website again.
Yep. Our website is it's info@ussedson.org. And we're also on Facebook under the Saginaw Valley Naval Ship Museum. So if you want to schedule a visit or whatever the case may be, like I say, give us a call and we can plan that event for you. And we'd be glad to have you over.
That's great. And I was glad to have you over tonight. And
well, thank you, Marla. I appreciate it.
And we can also thank the people who are listening in.
Yes. Thank you very much.
And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2024. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompetech.com.